Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to The Gospel According to Pixar, the coolest class I've taught so far. We are going to talk today about Monsters, Inc., which is one of my early favorite Pixar films. And I was laughing earlier that I got to, you know, watch Monsters, Inc. for work, which is like the best thing ever. So what we're going to do is we're going to start by watching a clip. And we're going to have more clips later in the class, but we are going to just have to start with one until I can get a VCR. But let's get started with this, and then we'll talk about it.
The future is bright at Monsters Incorporated. We power your car. We warm your home. We light your city.
I'm Monsters Incorporated.
Carefully matching every child to their ideal monster to produce superior strength, refined into clean, dependable energy. Every time you turn something on, Monsters Incorporated is there.
I'm Monsters Incorporated.
We know the challenge. The window of innocence is shrinking. Human kids are harder to scare.
Of course, MI is prepared for the future with the top scarers, the best refineries, and research into new energy techniques.
We're working for a better tomorrow. Today,
we are Monsters Incorporated.
Monsters Incorporated. We scare because we care.
So this is the intro to the whole movie. And I want to get started with that clip, and I want to ask some questions about it. But first, as I said before, I'm sort of lightly guided by a book called The Gospel According to Pixar, which is from Mockingbird Ministries. And it goes through a variety of the earlier Pixar films and offers some critical questions and some relationship between those movies and Scripture. So if you're interested in getting that to have at home to sort of turn movie night into spiritual formation, I would highly suggest that. But also, based on the first, the ad of Monsters, Inc., I want to ask you, so this is a world where there has been a commoditization of fear. We very clearly created a world where fear is being sold. It's being transformed into a measurable amount of energy. And later, the Henry K. Waternoose, who's the CEO, says, "Without scares, we have no power." And that is meant to talk about the fact that there is no energy power, but I think there is a lot more behind that statement. So as the movie rightly suggests, fear is a powerful fuel, and it motivates and generates a great many of our actions and plans, though maybe not generating our light fixtures. And so I want to ask you, like the residents of Monstropolis who are running on fear, they are by definition afraid that the fuel will run out. So one of the plots of the film is that they're afraid they will run out of fear. That is what fuels them. So how do you see this sort of commoditization of fear or fear being used as power in your own life and culture?
Work?
Just a light question to get us started. Y'all, this movie is deep. I'm just telling you. I didn't know until I started watching it. So you said work.
You're always afraid you're going to lose your job, so kind of in a fear-based environment.
Have you watched CNN lately?
Yeah.
No, because I'm trying to work on this. But yes. So I hear entertainment and news sources as being a source of fear, and work as a anxiety and maybe scarcity environment.
Politics,
we'll just leave it at that. Where else do you see fear used?
You said personal fears like failure, rejection.
I saw it a lot in my kids with the STAR testing, with the standardized testing, that the teachers were really, I don't think meaning to, but definitely driving their fear down to the kids so that the kids were...
Yeah, it kind of goes with the work here too, because their funding is based on how well their class, you know, so right.
Well, when they make the kids afraid, they won't pass on to the next grade. Mm-hmm.
So fear, what I hear you saying, fear is used as sort of a motivator. So in order for you to achieve excellence, we're putting a little bit of fear in you to try to produce your best.
Yes.
Although many scientists and psychologists have debunked the idea that fear is actually a good motivator toward success.
It's so, like the worst motivator.
Yeah.
I mean, I finally can figure out my kids trying to scare them into doing something just makes what I was trying to accomplish 5 times more difficult because then they're more worried about the fear part than they are what they were trying to accomplish.
I also think about, in seminary, I took a class from our ethics professor, and he wrote a book called Following Jesus in a Culture of Fear, and it was all about fear-based, just our whole world being fear-based. And one of the things he talked about is that advertising has taken on a very fear-based approach, sort of making you scared about something so that you then want to prevent it, and so you'll buy X, Y, and Z products to be preventative over a fear that, you know, it might be that, yes, it's possible, but there's just such a slim chance that would ever happen to you, but we want to make sure that you feel that a distant threat is an immediate threat that you need to put your money toward. He was actually talking about how he showed a screenshot of an article about sort of an outbreak of some sort of pest, and on each side of it were ads for insect repellent. So the ads were chosen to go with an article about it as a way to drive, you know, the fear from the article then drives you to want to go buy these products, even though this happened in like a different continent. But you should then want to go out and buy these products just in case it ends up on your front door as well. So is it an irrational fear? No. But it's also maybe not rational to go out and spend hundreds of dollars on equipment for it.
The cosmetic industry particularly seems to be based on fear of getting old, fear of aging.
Yeah, I don't know anybody.
Yeah, I don't either.
I'll add one thing. I don't think fear is a bad thing necessarily. I think fear is a good motivator, and I think that sometimes we need a little bit of fear. I think that the least common of all of the good traits in humanity is courage, and the reason why there is so little courage is that people are afraid. People are afraid to stand up for what they know is right. They're afraid to stand up for what they know is true because they fear repercussions. They fear how they'll be viewed. They fear consequences that will result in standing up for that. And so I don't necessarily think fear in and of itself is necessarily a bad thing.
What feeds into that, too, is Facebook and Twitter. Mm-hmm. There's so much of it today.
What's probably bad is marketing fear. That's a bad
That's true. But also in society, one thing that used to be a very common phrase, you almost never hear it anymore, is a God-fearing man. Mm-hmm. Or some or fear of God is the beginning of wisdom, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that maybe people are fearing the wrong things. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's misdirected, but it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Do you think they don't know how to manage fear? So it's that they're enveloped by fear and they don't know what to do.
I'm not an expert. I would diagnose it as a misprioritization.
Mm-hmm.
Of what's a fear?
A fear being used as a form of manipulation versus a form of
fear. Sure.
Yeah, and fear, I completely agree with you. I mean, there are biological responses we have to fear that are meant to preserve our lives, right? I mean, there are reactions that we have, and the point is to our health. I think what I'm speaking directly to is the idea that fear is power, or fear is power over someone or something, sort of the way the movie suggests that it can be your fuel. I don't think fear as fuel is helpful, but I do think that fear has its place within a range of things that can propel us forward. I don't know if you'd agree with that, but I see your point.
I think fear can become an overriding thing, though, where you are essentially paralyzed. Right? I know this from someone I have a relationship with. Right? He's paralyzed by fear, and he's afraid to take risks, afraid to like move forward in his life because he's afraid of change, or afraid of something. I don't know, he's dominated by it.
And that's to go back to courage, being so afraid that you aren't able to be courageous, yeah, versus fear being what propels you toward an act of courage.
It's the flip side of it, because fear can motivate you, but fear can also freeze you,
yes,
and keep you from moving, keep you from progressing. So, yeah, it's
like most neutral entities, I mean, things can be used well and they can be used poorly. You think about money. Money in and of itself is not a negative. It can be used both positively and negatively. And I think that fear is within that. So Sully and Mike are our two little monster buddies. Everyone has seen Monsters, Inc., correct? Or am I wrong? I don't want to make assumptions. Okay.
It's been a long time.
It's been a long time. That's why I try to give you a little refresher. But we'll talk about, I'll try to flesh out things before I ask questions. So Sully and Mike are buddies. You saw them in the video. Mike is the one that got covered up by the logo, which he is so excited he made it on the video regardless of that. And things get sort of turned upside down when a door is left open. They go into these doors, and those are the windows into the children's room. And a door gets left open, and a child comes in, and it is complete and utter mayhem. And they call her Boo, and at first they fear her because they have been taught that humans are toxic and that touching a human or being close to a human could kill them. But then, you know, with all of their fear and their terror, she touches them and they realize they haven't died yet. And so they realize that she's actually not a toxic creature to them. And then, especially Sully grows to really love her and to care about her life and want to preserve her life. And it's ironic because you'll notice in their first interactions that Sully is supposed to be the one who is scary. And Boo is supposed to be the one who is the recipient of fear. And that gets completely inverted. She is confident and giggling and going up to them and hugging them, and they are freaking out and they are terrified. And so from the minute that she enters the scene, things get turned upside down, and the scarer becomes the scared and the recipient of fear becomes the courageous one. And Boo is sweet, innocent, vulnerable, and Sully is supposed to be terrifying and powerful. But Boo calls him Kitty, which I think is hilarious. And she approaches him with what I can only call love and affection. She immediately wants to snuggle up with him and be close to him, and this makes him very uncomfortable. And over time, Boo really changes Sully as a monster. I mean, he takes on an entirely different role and identity. And so I'm curious, what do you think changes Sully as a monster?
I think the biggest change is when he sees what his anger and his fear does to her.
Say more about that.
There's a video in the montage, and I literally saw this movie with my nephew, who is now 16, about 45 times. There's a video scene where he sees himself on the video scaring a child, and then he sees her reaction to it. And it makes him realize, oh my gosh. And if you've ever seen yourself, like, had that moment as a parent where you're screaming and you're like, oh my gosh, I sound like a nut job. You know, it really does. I mean, that's a big impact. Like, when you actually can recognize that anger and that fear and how it affects other people.
And she bursts into tears. And so it's almost an out-of-body experience. He's watching him scare her, and it breaks his heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very sad.
So what else? That's a great example from the movie. Yes?
I think, too, you know, what causes him his first time when he sort of softens up and changes, I think, is when he realizes that you know, the wool's been pulled over his eyes here, that, oh, wait, she is actually not toxic. Oh, there's actually not a reason to fear here. So the fed pack of lies about this, and so what else are we being lied to about? And so this is sort of the reason why, okay, so this is not founded upon fact. This is, anyway. So I think
and
that's
awakening.
A catalyst. Yeah, an awakening, sure.
But it introduces questioning. He begins to question his world and his own identity within it, because he's been taught that the reason they scare is because they're toxic, right? So why are we scaring these creatures if they're not toxic and they are of no harm to us?
Well, and it's a service for society. They scare because they care. They want to provide good power for, you know, it's not a bad thing they're doing. It's a good thing. It's noble.
Yeah, and his motivations are pure from the beginning, but... One of the other things that happens is when they first start hanging out, Boo and Sully, I think it's Mike, falls over, hurts himself in some way, shape, or form, and she bursts into laughter. And all of a sudden, all the lights in the room go as bright as they possibly can. And so what we're beginning to learn is that laughter is actually much stronger than fear. And it gets more energy than fear. And so there are two sort of world changes that I would highlight that happened because of Boo entering the scene. And the first is that the whole industry of Monsters, Inc. changes by the end of it. Does anyone know? So it's called a scare floor, but it becomes the laugh floor by the end of it. Because through Boo, they realized that laughter actually creates more energy. And I think that tells us that, you know, the far better choice is to be fueled by joy and to be fueled by love. That doesn't mean fear doesn't have its place within the way we think and the way we react, but they are illustrating that you get more energy out of joy. And the other thing is that his relationship with Mike transforms throughout the movie. There comes a point where they go and visit the Abominable Snowman, who is hilariously nice and kind and loving. So a lot of this movie is also about dismantling preconceived notions. They have a preconceived notion that Boo is toxic, and instead they become best friends. We might have a preconceived notion that monsters don't have souls and can't be transformed into loving creatures. And then they go and visit the Abominable Snowman, who makes them snow cones and is like, I wish they'd just call me the Awesome Snowman. It's like hilarious because he's just this goofy, happy man. When they're with the Abominable Snowman, they're going to have a high risk in order to save Boo. And Mike says, I'm not doing this. I'm out. Like, I don't care about her that much. And it's a break in their relationship. But at the end of the film, Mike shows up. If you remember, they've shredded her door, and so he can't visit her anymore. And at the very end of the movie, Mike shows up, and he's gathered up all the shattered pieces of her door, and he's put them all back together so that, to close the movie, Sully can go just look in on her one last time. And you look down, and Mike has all of these scars on his hands, all of these splinter marks and scars on his hands. And so what we see is a sacrificial and loving act that he makes. And it is sort of the moment of their reconciliation. It is the way in which he says, I care just as much as you do about this child and about your friendship with this child. So what are your reflections on that? What are your reflections around those two ways that the whole world of Monstropolis is transformed through the entrance of Boo into their lives?
I feel like I need to watch it again.
Sorry, I'm trying to give some like background as I explain things, but
it came out, what, 10 years ago or more?
It was a while ago, yeah.
My nephew was 2, and he's 15 years ago, yeah. It's good. It's a really good one, though.
It's really good. And far deeper than I think I knew when I watched it 10 years ago.
I think the fear thing is so relevant, though, like, even to our society right now. I mean, especially with the past elections, like the elections in France. I mean, that's a perfect example of, let's scare the crap out of people's health so they don't make rational decisions. I mean, you know, just like however you feel about the wall is how you feel about it. But, like, rationally, if you really got someone to really rationally think about the fear of these people coming over, do you really think that a wall is going to stop, you know, the immigration? I mean, come on, let's be like sensible about it. But it's not rational. It's the fear-based scare, and so you forget all the, you know, your brain. Yeah, your brain would be your brain.
Well, and that's what I think when she enters the movie, that's what she kind of does. She just kind of stops it all.
Yeah.
People are just going through the motions and they aren't stopping and thinking rationally. And so she kind of causes like a series of just kind of like an awakening and starting to have some empathy.
Can we have something like that happen?
But she also causes chaos.
Yes.
So chaos first. Yeah. And then it starts to, yeah.
yeah.
Just growing pains.
And I think that the reason, I mean, Mike never really gets over his fear of her. Like, I mean, I think that's really what his, I mean, his abandonment of Sully is really because he just doesn't, it's not that he's seeing as we do, that he has, that Sully's embraced this cute, harmless thing. He sees his friend as having changed his world. And that's dangerous and scary to Mike. And so, you know, we apply it to our, I mean, there are ideas that in retrospect sound great, but at the time seem really horrible and scary. So to you, that wall seems ridiculous, but to others,
it feels like safety, and you know, it feels like the right decision. And I think you made an interesting comment. You said, I wish, who's going to walk out and do this for us and bring this in? And I think that just happened on Easter. Easter is the celebration of a different kingdom entering into ours, in which love and joy are actually seen as our greatest fuels. We believe that the perfect love of Christ casts out all fear. And that fear that is negative, specifically. We believe that by virtue of the life, death, and resurrection of Christ, what fuels us is Christ's love. That is what we then take into our relationships. And it is a countercultural approach to the world. It, like the entrance of Boo into the lives of Mike and Sully, it changes our world. We live differently. We believe and think differently. And so I do think that we've had something enter into the world, Jesus Christ in his incarnation, and then that we are currently in week two of celebrating this new world in which our greatest fuel is joy.
I also think just on a more kind of parenting level, a lot of times as parents we're so worried about teaching our children and making sure that we're providing what they need and making sure they do their homework and that they treat people kindly that we forget that we have a lot to learn from them, too. Mm-hmm. And if we just step back, you know, sometimes they can teach us to not be fearful or to accept something we hadn't accepted. Or I think Boo does a really good job of that. And she just does it in her own kid way. She's just having fun. And until they stop and really pay attention to her, they're afraid of her. They're not learning from her. And I think as parents, we need to be aware of what they're teaching us. Because they have a less jaded view of the world.
And I think Sully learns, and Mike is resistant to the learning, as you were basically saying. So speaking of parenting, what are ways in which you might watch this film, again, for the first time in 10 years, and then talk about it with your kids? Or then within the next week, what are ways that it could maybe come up in conversation as teaching moments?
I was a fearful child, so like I watched this, I saw The Rescuers when I was 4 and for my birthday, and literally I slept on my parents' floor for, I mean, my poor parents, they did not have much of a love life for a year. I mean, it was, my sleeping bag was under the bed, I had to start my room, but they said literally they would put their head on the pillow and I would be there, like I was there. And it was so, it's hard, like my kids have a little bit, Libby more, well, they both have a little bit, but, so I really wish I could be better at the fear, like not having the fear, because I had it. I don't know how to help them with that as much as I try to, like, oh, it's crazy. Like, that's silly. But I'm, like, so full crap because that was totally me.
But maybe your role is not to dissuade the fear, but to be empathetic to it. I know how that feels. I know how it feels to be scared. And I also know that you're going to be okay.
Yeah, that's what I say.
But to specifically say, like, actually, it's okay to be scared. And we're going to make it through that.
Or you just bully him to seeing Beauty and the Beast because you want to see it. And you're like, I'm going to go see this movie and you're coming and you're going to be fine. Let's go. Or you do that.
Yeah, that's also another option. Just different options.
And it's fine. Yeah, it's like, it's 9:30. No. Yeah, let's go to bed. Yeah, not listening to this fear again tonight.
Different approaches for different.
Not that I recommend, but sometimes.
So I don't know if this is taking it to a different direction, but like, to what extent should we have our children fear? For example, I wish my Eldest was more fearful of his punishments or potential punishments, or fearful of me in some way, but he's not, right? Yeah. So he just still has full reign of whatever he wants to do. So I'd like to manufacture some kind of fear, but I don't want to take it. I don't know. I mean, it just kind of plays into this conversation. That's why I'm bringing it up. But
I think kids are innately fearful or innately not fearful. I have three, and I have one kid that will jump off the roof and break his leg and get up and do it again because he has zero fear of anything in life. Yeah. And I have another one that would get scared of getting his finger shut with the door, so he's not going to open the door. Mm-hmm. Same parents, same household. They're just completely different kids. And, you know, my one that has no fear, it's just consequences. Like, you choose to do that, this is your consequence, and you got to live with your consequences. And we talk about, like, if that's your choice, what are your consequences? And you live, okay, then do it. And you know, we've had more than one ER visit because there's only so much you can do. And you just kind of have to be that safety net when they fall. Like, I still love you, but we got to go get stitches now. You know, that kind of thing.
But you got to let them fall, though.
But you got to let them fall. Yeah. And I think that's the hardest thing as a parent, is you just have to let them fall sometimes. You just have to. And it's scary as a parent, but you have to.
Is it the youngest one? Because it's usually the youngest
one.
It's my oldest.
Oh, my God. My youngest one is butterflies. Like, and I'm not kidding. It's great at everything. My oldest, but probably from watching his brother, who has no fear. And I'm serious. Like, I think that, I'm sure that played into the psychology of how my youngest one is before. And then my middle one is kind of, he's a little bit more, he has some fears, but not too much fear.
And I think this goes back to your comment about, you know, I mean, discipline is actually a virtue. You know, discipline is important. The discipline is to keep us safe. You know, when you touch the hot stove or whatever, that is to teach you to not do that again. And it is for your edification that you learned that. But I still think that that is toward a good. The idea of discipline is toward the good, the character building up of the child, the safety of the child, which is different from, I think, what I'm talking about within the film. So I think it is important to sort of walk that line and do like you're saying, but to not consider that a negative, because that is a way to build character.
Well, and so I have kids that, you know, are not great listeners either, but when they become adults, I think they're going to question a lot of what they hear and not just take things at face value, and that's probably a good thing, right? So, but it's hard right now when you're trying to get things done, and so that's hard for me too to reconcile, because I'm like, I really want them to do what I want them to do, but then when they're adults, I don't want them to be able to get manipulated. So it's hard.
I think the kids that push boundaries are also the ones that break boundaries as adults, right. And I think that can be negative, but it can be a great thing. I mean, we didn't have cell phones if somebody didn't think, I'm going to think completely out of the box and create something completely new. We wouldn't have airplanes if somebody didn't try. You know, so I think a lot of those kids are very scientific-minded kids.
So it is sort of, how do we negotiate a calculated risk?
Yeah.
I think is what it becomes, a safe calculated risk. And that is a hefty role that you play as parents. And more power to you.
I
don't do that. That's a Roy thing. We let him do his thing. I have to go a little bit earlier today because we have baptisms at 11:15. So I'm going to close us in prayer. If y'all would like to stay and chat, you have time. So please don't feel like you have to rush out of class. And thank you so much for this life-giving discussion. Again, I think sometimes sort of the silliest and funniest things can be deep sources of wisdom and can really speak to us, not just as parents, but as people. As someone who is not a parent, I learned a lot from watching this and have a lot to reflect on. So thank you for adding more to my reflection.
What's your next
question? Oh, okay. So, in tune with Earth Day, we're watching WALL-E, or we're talking about WALL-E, which is my favorite Pixar movie.
We haven't watched that with our kids yet, because we didn't feel like they would get it when they were a little bit younger.
Well, I'm super excited. I tried to theme that one in, so I'm super pumped. So I'm going to watch that for work this week. I'm super excited. Let us pray. Lord, make us instruments of your peace. Where there is hatred, let us sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is discord, union. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. Grant that we may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. Amen. Amen.